When Theodora Fitzgibbon died in 1991, she had published 30 cookery books and had been an Irish Times food writer for nearly 20 years. Now the chef and television presenter Donal Skehan has just published a new collection of the best recipes from this grand dame of Irish cookery. Donal is with me in studio. We'll talk about some recipes for Good Friday and perhaps for Easter in a few minutes. But Theodora Fitzgibbon, remind us who she was.
Well, Theodora had an incredible life and an incredible knowledge of Irish food and cooking. As you said, she had so many cookbooks. She had nearly 30 cookbooks, and she was the food writer for the Irish Times for over 20 years. So I think a lot of people will have fond memories, but people of my generation may not have heard of her. And so with this project, with the reprinting of her recipes, we really wanted to breathe new life into a fantastic body of work.
She was much more than a cook, though. She was somebody who had a really interesting life. Tell us a little bit about her.
She had an incredible life, and it was actually my aunt Anne gave me her two autobiographies. She has a two-part autobiography, and it's an incredible read. She had a really bohemian lifestyle, and which took in a lot of travel, and she rubbed shoulders with Francis Bacon and Picasso, and she really had a very kind of interesting life. And if you get a chance to read it, it is a wonderful autobiography. But it is her life which when you read her recipes, her knowledge of food, you know, it all comes into play when it comes together.
She was born in 1918, just at the end of the First War, obviously, in London, of Irish parents?
I think she had an Irish parent and an English parent, and she came to Ireland first when she was 7 years old. And when she was with Constantine Fitzgibbon, where she got her married name, she became the food writer for the Irish Times and continued to be. And then George Morrison she married, and he actually took a lot of the photographs that you would have seen in the Irish Times as well. And I actually met him to get approval for to take the photographs for her book.
But so, aside from George Morrison and Constantine Fitzgibbon, there were lots of other interesting men along the way as well.
There absolutely was. And if you read possibly the first few pages of her autobiography, she talks about one of her first lovers in Paris, and they had very little money, and she was living the kind of a lifestyle of a bohemian artist, and she goes into great detail about her.
Who was that first love of her life that she met in Paris?
Peter is his name. I can't remember his second
Peter
name.
Peter Pullum, is it?
Yes. And I mean, she goes on to talk about the many different people she met along the way, and a really fascinating life. And when it came to food, you know, she really had fond memories of all the travel she did, you know, in India, in the Bermuda. You know, she has great knowledge on different cuisines across the globe.
And before we get back to Ireland with her, where she came in 1959, but she, after the war, she met her husband, the man you mentioned earlier, who gave her the name. That was Constantine Fitzgibbon. But it wasn't the happiest of marriages.
I think near the end it became a bit of a tricky relationship, and she kind of talks about that. But I think Theodora was a very free-spirited person, and certainly if you read her autobiography you can see that. And so I think she always knew what way she wanted to go, and in the latter years she decided to kind of bow out a little bit. And when she moved back to Ireland, it was kind of at a time where she kind of wanted to reconsider the relationship.
She came back, as I say, in 1959 and started her cookery career. Now how would you define her cooking style?
Her cooking style, I mean, the amazing thing about Theodora is her breadth of knowledge. You know, she has a huge breadth of knowledge in terms of the sort of cuisine she touched on. While Irish food is a big part of her passion, you look at the other ingredients. And when we were choosing and selecting recipes for this book, The Pleasures of the Table, the idea was to kind of give an essence of that, because obviously she has great knowledge on Irish food, but her use of different spices and ingredients from different cuisines is incredible as well. So I suppose it's someone who really knows world food.
It's hard to believe, as I said in the intro, that she had published 30 cookery books before she died. Did you go through all 30 of them?
We didn't, because we were with. It's a book that's published by Gillan Macmillan, so quite a number of them were with Gillan Macmillan. So I had to choose from those books.
Okay, there were maybe copyright issues or something like
there
that.
There was, yes, but I mean,
but even then, quite
even
a choice.
Even then, but I mean, that was the frustrating thing, was because when I went through them, I went onto eBay to find them, because a lot of them are out of print at this stage, and so I was kind of going through books, and there was ones that I loved from one book, and we couldn't use them, but I mean, the collection we now have is really one that I'm incredibly proud to have been a part of. And I mean, it just shows the great range she has in terms of cooking and food writing.
Yeah, and maybe you might just talk us through some of the things that she fell back on staples, as it were. I mean, one thing that struck me reading it, Donald, was that even somebody like me could make some of these recipes.
But that's the thing. And I think, you know, what's really important about this as a project is that, you know, a lot of people have huge, you know, great fond memories of Theodora, but it's the new generation. I want to get people, you know, excited about her again. And so, you know, I mean, there's ingredients and certainly things that my we brought this up to my grandfather, this recipe, braised rabbit and a rabbit pie. And he had wonderful memories of this and told me all the, his...
Oh, actually, no, before you turn away the page from that, I mean, about rabbit pie, because there's one or two places. There's a shop in Dunleary on the main street, the name of which escapes me, but they sell wild rabbit, and I bought a couple of them lately.
Did you?
And took them home and put them in the slow cooker, and the meat was beautifully tender. It all fell off the skeleton, and they chopped it up and the rest of it for me. But one thing that I didn't do to my satisfaction was just get the flavour quite right with the berries. I put in some sort of a mix that I got in the supermarket.
Okay,
shelves.
Okay, but I mean,
that might have been for chicken or something. I'm just wondering.
Going into that, I mean, if you look at kind of the recipes that Theodora has, she generally brings it to a very simple kind of addition of spices and things like that, and she braises hers with a little bit of pinch of marjoram, she carrot, onion, and just normal chicken stock. So I mean, she does generally keep it very, very simple. But beyond the kind of traditional ingredients like rabbit and things like that, you know, you go to something like Place Lahori, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But I think this kind of draws on the idea that she had such a great knowledge of world cuisine, and this is a beautiful recipe. And we actually made it. We've done a new series that's going to be out in May on RT about rediscovering the Irish kitchen, and we cooked through this, and it's a beautiful recipe because it's I suppose it's a very simple one. And a lot of people think when you're making a spicy sort of marinade that it's going to be overpowering, but this is really subtle. And she makes a marinade with onion, lemon, coriander, some garlic, some turmeric, some ginger, and some tomatoes. And it's a really simple one because you just make the marinade and you cook it with the place, or you can cook it with chicken as well. And it's a really gorgeous one, very, very simple to make, and subtle flavours, really subtle spices.
I suppose, as you said earlier, you were probably only about 7 or 8 years age when this great lady died, but I note that in writing the book, or some comments that you made, that when you first came across Theodora's voice, you said she sounded exactly as you'd hoped. Now, let's take a listen to something she said on RT Radio many years ago.
And when people say potatoes have been in Ireland since Sir Walter Raleigh's time, which is the 16th century, potatoes certainly have, but not the potato we eat today. As far as I can ascertain, I think the Virginian potato came much later from settlers in Virginia. And I think a lot of these were also used in trade, and they came back to Ireland, I think, through Spain, through Europe, through England. But previously to that, there was a root that was very common here, commonly eaten, called skerret, S-K-E-R-R-E-T, or it's spelt sometimes with an I, but because the spelling, even though it was not general. And that is very like a potato. I have, in fact, eaten it, and there's lots of recipes for that everywhere.
So that's Theodora Fitzgibbon speaking in a 1984 RT radio documentary on the history of, you guessed it, the potato, made by a namesake of yours, actually a man called Johnsky. And I don't know if you were related to him or just.
I only heard this morning. It's an incredible little intro there. But I mean, when you hear her speak, it's wow. I mean, sure, her voice is booming. She speaks with authority, and you can hear her expertise when she speaks. And I mean, when I heard that for the first time after kind of working through her recipes for so long, and I'd never heard her voice, she just became alive. And I mean, I think I'd love to find if anyone has any recordings of her, or, you know, if there's more out there, I'd love to hear it, because they're very hard to track down.
Yeah, and on page 112, actually, just to pick up on the potato reference, there's a recipe. I don't think it could be simpler. For Irish omelette, it says you need 4 eggs, 1 tablespoon of butter, a squeeze of lemon juice, 1 large cooked potato, salt and pepper. What could go wrong?
Absolutely. But that's the simplicity of her recipes. It really is. And actually, one of the other ones, I mean, she talks quite in detail about kind of traditional Irish recipes. And I brought you in some ger cake. And when we were cooking this for the TV series, the one thing that got so much likes and retweets was a picture of ger cake. People have really great memories of it. And it's a traditional Dublin recipe. And it's kind of going out of favour now. I mean, you see it very few times now.
Yeah, do you want to take us through it?
Yeah, it's a very simple one. And I actually made it last night. So you start off with making some shortcrust pastry, and then you make a paste. And the wonderful thing about gourcake, it's and actually in Sweden they have a another recipe which uses up the leftovers in the bakery called a dammsuger, which is a hoover, and it uses up all the little leftovers, and they roll it into a paste, and then slosh it with lots of brandy and all sorts of things, and cover it in marzipan. But our Irish version, the gourcake, uses up stale bread and mixes it together. You make a paste with some moist stale bread, with some baking powder, some mixed spice, some brown sugar, some butter, some currants or mixed dried fruit. Beat it together with a large egg and some milk, and you get this wonderful kind of fragrant spiced mixture. So you spread that in between two layers of short crust pastry, and you literally put it in the oven.
See, when you say
hour.
Something like short crust pastry, that would frighten a guy like me. Would how would I go about making something like that?
Well, there's some fantastic Irish producers making making short crust pastry that you can buy straight from the shops. So you must seek them out if you're scared. But it's very, very simple. Short crust pastry is basically butter, flour and a little bit of sugar if you're making it sweet.
Now, we were talking a lot about court-related matters in the programme, but you have another recipe for a thing called a Dublin lawyer. I think there's a wonderful sense of humour about this when we hear about the ingredients. Dublin lawyer, tell us about that.
I love this one. And actually, we got the lobster from my next-door neighbour, and it's a fantastic recipe, and it is so rich and indulgent, and kind of what I'd imagine Theodora of a lunchtime to be sitting around and eating in the garden. So, but it's made very simply with a fresh lobster. Now, there's two ways to do it. My kind of current version is you can boil the lobster and take out the meat and toss it in the sauce. But she recommends that you take out the flesh of a fresh lobster, you cut it into chunks and you fry it in a little bit of butter. And just before it's coloured, you take it out and you add in a little bit of whiskey. And you add in cream and you mix all the pan juices together with a little bit of salt and pepper, and you get this really rich and indulgent sauce over lobster. It is absolutely gorgeous.
What else could it be called other than Dublin lawyer?
This is it.
One fresh lobster, about a kilogram, cut down in two, cut in two down the centre, 3 heaped tablespoons of butter, 4 tablespoons of Irish whiskey, 1/4 pint of cream, salt and pepper, and Bob's your lawyer.
There you go. You can't go wrong.
Okay, and there's a rather longer list of ingredients now for the gourcake, which would be a bit more complicated, but I think we can put those up on our website later. And then did I let you go through the rest of the place Lahori, if you pronounce it correctly?
Yes.
A very important thing you say is you want a decent bit of place.
A decent bit of place, and she actually says that, and I think if you read it, but you do need large place, not those wafer thin tasteless little things you see most often. And she goes on to say that she's made it with dogfish and monkfish fillets, and it was delicious. And she also has a recipe for a chicken version as well, as I mentioned. The ingredients for that, for the marinade, is 2 tablespoons of onion diced, the juice of 1 lemon, some freshly ground coriander, and we actually used some fresh when we made this, a pinch of either of powdered garlic or turmeric. We used fresh garlic in this case, and the turmeric gives it wonderful colour. And then she used stem ginger. We used stem ginger from a jar, but you could also use fresh ginger here. It's about a thumb-sized piece. And then the pulp of 2 ripe tomatoes. And it makes this really lovely recipe and marinade, and you bake it in the oven just until the fish is cooked through. So really simple food for a Good Friday.
Okay, and speaking of Good Friday, you have another one called Kedgeree. I don't think we've time to get into that right now.
No, Kedgeree is a great recipe, and it's a wonderful one. And it's a way of using up rice, leftover rice, with lots of great spices and hard-boiled eggs and smoked fish as well.
It wouldn't be one enough for the Dublin lawyer, because you can use tinned salmon or tuna in this, and you have hard-boiled eggs and stuff.
One thing when you read through Theodora's recipes is there's some kind of touches on an older way of cooking, and she in one recipe extols the virtues of using smash to cover a fish pie.
Oh, really?
Which I don't think many people would stand over nowadays.
It's the famous Neil Tobin sketch about going to this hotel in the Midlands, and they put a lump of smash into the middle of the soup to lighten it up.
But that's the thing. I mean, when you look back at these recipes, that's what you're celebrating. You know, it's this great knowledge of food.
Well,
and
who'd have thought it? Smash making a comeback.
You never know.
And you as well, Donal Skehan. We leave it there. The book is called The Pleasures of the Table, Rediscovering Theodora Fitzgibbon. Over 150 classic dishes from Ireland's much-loved food writer, selected and photographed by Donal Skehan. Published, I think it's for $24.99.
Yes, I think so. That's and it's by Gillan Macmillan.
Okay, and a very solid book, as most of these have to be, because they're probably going to have to absorb lumps of butter and the blobs of whiskey and whatever else. We leave it there. Back with Paddy O'Gorman, Visiting Cemeteries, after the break.